What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Canes Insight Daily Podcast, powered by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. A lot of stuff happened this weekend. We had four new commitments from the transfer portal. Four. We did commitment reaction videos on each of those commits. So check it out on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you want to see it or hear it. We had reactions for each of those players: Damian Martinez, Sam Brown, Deonte Hill, and also Jalen Alderman. Video for each of them. Check that out. So today we're going to focus on the other big thing about the weekend, which was the NFL draft. You had four Canes going off the board. Obviously a disappointing day in terms of the placement, but very happy for those guys with their chance to prove what they can do and fulfill their dreams. So we're going to break down each of those guys, took a little bit of their draft story, some behind the scenes stuff from Peter, who is still very plugged into the NFL draft and scouting world from his agent days. So we're going to get into some exclusive stuff there. Also, I did a pretty deep dive into a statement that Alonzo Highsmith made talking about how many NFL draft picks you need to sign in a recruiting class consistently to be a championship caliber program. So I did the research, and we're going to get into those results. Very, very interesting stuff on where the Canes need to be in terms of adding talent to the program. So we'll take a look at that. It's going to be a lot of fun. First, I want to talk about my friends at Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys, your number one draft pick when it comes to dealing with an accident. If you or someone you know has been injured, call Anajar and Levine, 1-800-747-FREE, 1-800-747-3733. Take back control of your life with the blue chippers, the number one picks, Anajar and Levine. So, Pete, bringing you in here. I know this process, your first draft day on the sidelines, not there with the picks, with the players, but you're talking to people, you have a lot of insight, had a lot of insight after pro day, which we're going to go back and look to, something that maybe surprised a few folks on draft day that you had a little bit of an insight on. But overall, what's your take from the draft with four Canes going off the board?
Well, look, obviously would have hoped that some of these guys would have gotten drafted higher. People expected them to, you know, come back to school. In today's day and age, obviously with the NIL opportunities on the table, you're seeing a lot more guys come back to school. Each of these guys have different situations as to why they fell in the draft. Leonard Taylor, I think off the top, is probably the one that regrets his decision most right now. I don't think there's any doubt about that. D, and look, you can go back to his inconsistent film, the lack of work ethic, the lack of, I don't want to say lack of work ethic necessarily as much as the lack of a consistent motor shown on that film really hurt him. So that was obviously a huge thing. Got some information that he did not even have any 30 visits, right? So no team brought him in throughout the process after, you know, after the testing, did not have a good testing numbers at the combine, obviously. And then did not really improve upon that at pro day either. So just not a great process leading up to the draft, right? He could probably have overcome some of the inconsistent film and gotten drafted late in this process if the testing was better, if some, you know, the interview process along the way was maybe a little smoother, right? But I thought we had to talk about him real quick there, D, because he to me was the storyline of the weekend.
Yeah, look, Miami needs these premium defensive tackles. These are the building blocks of national championship teams. You think back to Marcus Forston, who was the jewel of that 2008 class, five-star defensive tackle, also went undrafted. This is a trend Miami absolutely needs to correct. You think of a guy like Justin Scott. You think of a guy like Armando Blunt. High hopes for those guys. Miami needs to take those guys and get them to a point where they're shaking Roger Goodell's hand. That's where this has to go with those players. You cannot have a repeat of a Leonard Taylor and a Marcus Forston where those guys don't fulfill their five-star potential. But let's start with some good news, which is Cam Kitchens, top 100 pick after all the talk. He'd be fourth round, second round, third round. Ends up being a third rounder, 99th pick to the Los Angeles Rams. 5'11", 1/4", 203 pounds, 4'6", 9'2", broad. The testing really is one of the reasons why he slipped. But it also explains why he landed with the Rams. So what can you tell us about the Rams, Pete?
Well, a few things, and just on Cam's situation in particular, D, as we have the video here playing, it was awesome, you know, seeing the emotion from him, and we understand his character and what he brings to the table there. A guy who could have gone anywhere in the country decided to come to Miami. But with Cam, and people continue to point to mock drafts preseason, right? The scouts that I spoke to even before the season never saw Cam Kitchens as a first-round pick. Not because he's not a tremendous football player. He was an All-American, right? Put up the numbers. Didn't have great film this year, right? But with Cam, it was always going to be the physicals. Not the biggest, not the fastest. Was never slated to test well, right? Which is still such a big part of this process, D. You can turn on the tape and say, I really like that football player. But certain guys, based on measurables, are just going to go in certain spots, right? So I went back and listened to some of the stuff we said after Pro Day. I said he solidified himself as a top Kane, and which wasn't a surprise, but I said he solidified himself as a top 100 pick, which he ends up going 99, right? So that was, you know, maybe a little bit closer than I thought there, but this was generally where I expected him to go. Talking about the Rams in particular, a team that historically, at least in the last few years under this regime, does not really rely on the testing numbers of the combine as much as they do with the in-game GPS tracking to see how fast guys are in game. We see it with Puka Nacua, what, you know, the success that he had for them last year, and they tend to find guys. They don't necessarily send the most people to the combine either in terms of scouts and player personnel and things of that nature. They tend to be on the lower side of sending people out there to the combine. So they don't weigh that side of as much as they do the, obviously, the film and the analytics within the film there.
Yeah. And look, the player to me, he is a great tackler, at least in terms of physicality. Obviously there's some issues in space where some of the athleticism, you know, maybe gets exposed, but I think the guy's a very tough physical tackler, gets guys down, always has been since he's a freshman. And then the ball hawk ability, 11 picks in 2 years. This is a league where takeaways are at a premium. That's the number one indicator of who wins or loses a game. And Cam Kitchens is able to take the ball away at a different rate than others. And the character's off the charts. I think one thing with Cam, you know, Ed Reed's obviously the comparison as far as the gold standard at that position, especially in Miami. Ed Reed entered the league at 24. Okay, just to give you a idea of how old that is, Sean Taylor he passed away at 24. So all the great things he did in the NFL, that legendary highlight reel, that was before Ed Reed was even a rookie in terms of age to age. So Ed Reed came into the league late. When Ed Reed was a redshirt sophomore, basically the equivalent of what Cam is now, he was making a lot of big mistakes. People remember the Penn State game where he made some plays similar to what Cam did in Georgia Tech, getting over aggressive. So the Ed Reed that entered the NFL was not the Ed Reed that you saw at that same age as Cam. So I think Cam's got a lot of upside as he learns the pro game. He will learn the pro game. He's in a great environment. He is going to put everything he has into it. And I think he will figure it out and be, I'm not saying he's going to be a multiple pro bowler like a Kevin Byard, but I think he will be that kind of player stylistically, ball hawk, tackler, student of the game, somebody that you love having on your team. So really excited for him. He was a great Kane. His jersey's, his numbers in the rafters, and I think he'll do a great job for the Los Angeles Rams. All right, the surprise pick of the draft was certainly Jaden Davis going to the Arizona Cardinals. The Oklahoma transfer played his last season at Miami, ends up going 7th round, 226th pick to the Arizona Cardinals, 5'9¾", 187 pounds, 4'4", 7'40", 9'11", broad. I'm really happy to see that. Kind of like DJ Ivy last year going to the Bengals, it surprised a lot of people. But remember, if you remember the DJ Ivy pick, we were mentioning that he was building momentum in the process with his workouts, with his interviews. Didn't expect him to get drafted necessarily, but thought he'd have a chance. And Pete, you had a similar read on Jaden Davis after his pro day.
Next level, Jaden Davis, who came to Miami from Oklahoma, right, and played a bunch of football at Oklahoma, comes to Miami probably to play nickel. That was the idea coming in. But out of necessity, needed to play one of those boundary corner spots. Goes out there, runs in the mid-4.4s today. Had a couple people notice and tell me that he looked thicker, put some good weight on in this pre-draft process. So he's a guy who, whether it's as a priority free agent, a minicamp guy who then gets signed and gets an opportunity to get in camp and be on that 90-man roster for training camp and some preseason games, guy who had who played a lot of football, played an important role for Miami this season defensively, as a nickel in today's game, you need to be able to be physical. You need to be able to tackle, right? So he could, in the right situation, get on a practice squad.
So I was kind of underselling it there, D. I said he could be a priority free agent and have an opportunity to make a team, but really, a guy like him at Pro Day didn't have an opportunity to go to the combine, but shows up looking how he did, as we said there, looked physically more built than he had had at any point of his college career, kind of forces the scouts to go back, watch the tape, and realize, man, he had a really good season at Miami, had done some good things at Oklahoma early in his career, right? Kind of lost his spot over there, comes to Miami and does what he does this year. Again, forces scouts to go back, watch the tape, and put him back on the radar. So props to him, props to this Miami staff, obviously Coach Guidry, Coach Adai, who's now at the next level, for making the most out of the situation with Jaden that they had this year. And then obviously he doing what he had to do in the pre-draft process to get himself drafted there.
Yeah, Pete, I was standing right next to you. He did have a great workout. I remember a scout telling us, unprompted, that Jaden Davis had a good day. We didn't even ask about Jaden Davis. So going back and looking at it, you can see how he rose, and very happy for him for getting that opportunity and hearing his name called. That's got to be something he'll never forget. Another seventh round pick, and really seventh round for Miami, kind of made their bones here, which is not what you want, but happy to guys get, again, these guys heard their names and they're going to get that shot. Matt Lee, seventh round pick, 237th pick overall to the Cincinnati Bengals, 6'3 and 5'8, 301 pounds, 503 in the 40, 4.67 shuttle, which is great, 9'3 broad, which is more than Cam Kitchens. The film was good. The workout was good. I heard nothing bad about the interviews. Pete, this really came down to the medical with Matt Lee, right?
Yeah, so a couple things. He tested historically well, if you look at the numbers, right? So really blew the workout out of the water. From what I understand, has some sort of back issue that teams are not necessarily sure he's going to be able to have the longest career, but that's the beauty of getting an opportunity. Now he's getting drafted. He has the ability to be a starting center in this league, right? Doesn't necessarily have the versatility as some of these other interior linemen do. So some of these guys who get drafted who end up playing center can also play guard. He does not have that positional versatility. There's only 32 starting centers in the league. Most backups tend to have the ability to play somewhere else on that line. Not sure he can do that, but has the ability to play, has the talent to play. And again, if he can go in there and win a starting job, I'm not sure what the situation is over there in Cincinnati at center, but if he can work his way onto the field and prove that he can stay healthy, there's no reason he can't go get a second contract and play years in this league. He has that talent. The question is, can he get in there and is he going to be able to stay healthy? So you start to get some insight, D, right, into not only why he wasn't a top 3-4 round pick, but why it really didn't make sense for him to come back and play another year at Miami. Although, yes, he would have made NIL money, but he gets drafted, and a guy who's given so much to the game already, you want them to have an opportunity to go play pro football. If he comes back another year, he's already, we understand there are medical concerns. So let's go take it to the next level and give myself a shot here.
Yeah. Look, I am by no means making this comparison. I give this disclaimer because some people don't get it and think I'm comparing the players or the trajectory of their careers. Not doing that at all. But the Bengals rang a bell because probably the best offensive lineman in history, or one of them, Anthony Munoz, who was drafted by the Bengals, he was medically disqualified on a lot of boards back in the day. So you just never know with the medicals. That's the point I'm trying to make, is you make your best decision as a team based on the information you have. Different teams have different opinions, but you really never know. It's hard to predict injuries. So hopefully not only does Matt Lee succeed on this first contract, but he's able to have a long career with a nice second contract and be a starting center in this league, because he does have the ability. Whole different situation here with the seventh round 242nd pick of the Tennessee Titans. So really just a few picks after Matt Lee, and that is James Williams, drafted as an outside linebacker by the Tennessee Titans, 6'4 and a quarter, 231 pounds, 33 and 5/8 inch arms, so very long arms, 4.65, 49 9 broad. This one to me is almost a replay of Ray Ray Armstrong a few years ago, a name you may remember out of Sanford Seminole, was recruited to Miami to be the next Sean Taylor because he was a tall safety, athletic guy. We didn't really have great safeties there. So, you know, he didn't want to play safety, or he didn't want to move off safety. He didn't have the great safeties to sort of push him off the position. So he ends up playing safety, switches to linebacker in the pros, undrafted, but ends up making a team. And, you know, Ray Ray Armstrong played like 80 something games in the pros at linebacker. And you wonder if he would have played linebacker from the beginning, could he have been a high draft pick who really stuck around for 100 plus games, right? Because he still played a lot on special teams and started games on defense. I think he had over 100 tackles. So he played a decent amount. But again, you will wonder what if with Ray Ray Armstrong, had he played that position from the beginning and put on weight in the beginning as opposed to making it in the pros. James Williams, I think, is a similar situation. With no linebacker tape, resisted the move to from safety. You didn't have great safeties to push him out aside from Cam Kitchens. So he's making the transition now. Hopefully it's a successful move like it was for Ray Ray, and he has an even longer career in the pros.
Yeah, a few things with James. Obviously, the tape was also inconsistent at Miami. Did not test well amongst the safeties group, but we understand that he's going to be transitioning to the linebacker spot. And really, D, with him, it's such a projection, right? Because some of the things that he lacked on tape was consistent, you know, tackling, physicality, flashes, but not necessarily what you're looking for always at the linebacker position. So it's a big projection with him. But he's a guy that I said time and time again during the process needed to be the right fit. Obviously, Tennessee, you know, with Rand Carthon over there, trying to build something. It's a new regime. So hopefully he gets a good look over there. And we saw the emotion from him when he was drafted. We understand and we know his story. So we'll all be rooting for him 100%.
Yeah, just going back to Ray Ray, I pulled up his profile. 156 tackles in his career, 3 picks, 86 games, 12 starts. So I think James Williams can do more than Ray Ray. I think he's a more talented player than Ray Ray. He's got more pure size than Ray Ray. So hopefully he locks down a position and has an extended career and a lot of success because he has the ability and, of course, a lot of passion for UM. You're just a guy you really root for. And you hope the next tall safety that comes to Miami that projects as a linebacker, we can get him at linebacker earlier. Don't try to be the next Sean Taylor if you're going to be a linebacker in the pros. Get at the position you're going to play in the pros early. The coaches aren't doing that because they don't like you. They're doing that because they want the best for you and for the team. And I think the fact that James Williams is open to playing linebacker now is very positive. He was very clear. He's going to play linebacker. They expect him to play linebacker, and he's going to go and go to work and hopefully get up to that 240 range and really bust some heads. So excited for James Williams. Of course, that was the last pick. We talked about Leonard Taylor, that situation. Another name, Javion Cohen, the Cleveland Browns, someone that a lot of people on the internet, you know, Charles Bentley, former great center for the Browns, I believe it's for the Browns, wasn't he? Or he, the former Ohio State center, played a long time in the pros. He was very clear that he thought that Javion Cohen was one of the top 5 guards in the class. I thought the guy was a draft pick all day just based on his performance on the field. Pete, you have some insight into, you know, some of the things that he was going against in the process.
Well, look, it's a tough one because, like you said, his film was solid this year, went to the Senior Bowl, and you know, by all accounts, had a solid showing out there as well. But I kind of alluded to it as we went through the draft process and went through these things on pro day. There were questions about his move from Bama to Miami for sure. I mean, he was an All-American type player, All-Conference type player at Bama. Comes down to Miami, and yes, you know, there's a whole different bunch of different reasons why he potentially would want to come to Miami, but that kind of threw some people to a loop. I'm sure that Saban and the people over there did not have the most glowing reviews about him, you know, the way he left and came down here. So that was one. And two, the interview process is important, man. I don't know all the details and as to what transpired in some of these interviews. But again, I mentioned at the combine, goes to the combine, did not run a 40, but then went through all the other stuff on the drills on the field. So that, you know, that team's kind of question, well, why are you going through this and not the other stuff, right? So
questions that pop up, the interview process sometimes are very hard to overcome for certain guys. And if they aren't able to get through it, then it's gonna hurt them in the process.
Yeah, and look, we'll see how it plays out. I think Cohen's going to make the Cleveland Browns or another NFL team. I think he will be on an NFL roster this season and do a great job. So excited for his opportunity, and I think he's going to make the most of it. Some other names: Tyler Harrell, free agent to the Jets. The speedster, obviously a pure speed flyer there. Branson Dean, who had injuries. I know he had a late round potential grade if he had a good season with Miami. Dealt with injuries, but he gets a chance with the Bills to make that team. So cheering for all those guys and anyone else. If a KJ Cloyd, I know he'll be at mini camps, so someone could latch on. Cheering for all these former Canes and hoping for the best. A lot of guys have outperformed their draft stock in recent years for the Canes, so hopefully these guys all exceed expectations and have long and prosperous careers. And thank him for the Canes. We're going to shift focus to the draft as a whole and what Mario needs to do going forward. So we're talking about first round picks and second round picks and real big smiles on draft day, and how that impacts championships. Did a real deep dive study. I think you guys are going to like. First, want to shout out Canes, where you see the hats here. They got Dolphins gear. Dolphins made a lot of draft picks this weekend. You want the Dolphins gear, they got it at Canes and caneswear.com. Miami Heat, Marlins, Panthers, right there in the playoffs. Inter Miami. Caneswear.com or Caneswear in Davie, Arrowhead Plaza, the spot where Miami fans shop. Okay, now, I really spent way too much time doing this, but you really got to dive deep sometimes when you ask a question, a hypothesis, so to speak. Not a scientist, my wife is, I pretend to be. But Alonzo Highsmith had a tweet where he said, you need basically 5 to 7 drafted players in each recruiting class to compete at the championship level. And to win championships, presumably it's on the higher end of that. So I went back and looked at the champions from 2013 to 2020. I would have gone further, but some of those guys are still in college. Some of those recruits are still in college with the COVID year, so I didn't want to distort the numbers. So basically we're looking at the 2013 Noles all the way through that Mac Jones Alabama championship team, and dove into the numbers, and very, very interesting going through it. And, starting from the top of those champions, those are 8 championship teams. You had 7.66 per class draft picks. So about 7.66, 7 2/3 draft picks per class. The low was the 2016 Clemson team with Deshaun Watson, 5 2/3. Average. The high was 9 1/3 average for Alabama. So somewhere between 5 and 9, but on average 7. And remember, this is 3 classes. So just some more on the methodology. I'm looking at, let's say it's a 2020 Alabama Crimson Tide. I'm looking at the 2019 recruiting class, which would be the true sophomores on that team, the 2018 class, which would be the true juniors, and the 2017 class, which would be the true seniors. So that's the window I'm looking at for these 3-year windows and snapshots for each of these teams, just so you understand the methodology. But again, 7.66 NFL players per class. On average, about 66.3%. So the clear majority, about 2/3 of those draft picks were day 1, day 2 picks. So they're not being pumped up by lower round picks. These are majority day 1, day 2 picks. About 2/3 of that 7 2/3 players is going to be day 1, day 2 picks. And the amount of first rounders over that 3-year span on average, 6.75. So just under 7 first rounders, between 6 and 7 first rounders over that 3-year span. That's on average, a little over two a year, right? So you're getting at least 2 first rounders a year under this sample. Some teams got a ton. Alabama's 2020 team had 11 during that time period. The Noles had 4. The 2013 Noles with Jameis Winston. They had a lot of second round picks. So starting with those Noles, the 2013 Noles, their average is right there on the number, 7.33 drafted players for those 3 classes on average per class. 63.6% of them were day 1 or day 2 picked. Again, about average, 4 total first rounders. That's on the low end. 2010, you had Cameron Irving, first round center, Bjorn Werner, first round defensive end out of Germany, LaMarcus Joyner, second round defensive back out of South Florida, Terrence Brooks, a safety, third rounder, Telvin Smith, a very fast linebacker, fifth rounder, Mike Harris, I believe also another South Florida kid in the sixth round. Go on to the 2011 class. This was one of the home run classes with nine players being drafted. Kelvin Benjamin, first round. Tank Carradine, second round. Timmy Jernigan, second round. Trey Jackson, fourth round. Devontae Freeman, South Florida kid, fourth round. Carlos Williams, fifth round. Rashard Green, another South Florida kid, fifth round. Nick O'Leary, another South Florida kid, sixth round. Bobby Hart, South Florida kid, seventh round. And I won't go through all the names, but that was a big one with nine. Then in 2012, you had seven, headlined by Jameis Winston as your first round pick, and a couple big, highly recruited second round defensive linemen, Mario Edwards and Eddie Goldman. So you're talking about your quarterback as a first rounder, a monster class right in the middle there with nine first rounders, a lot of second round picks, a lot of day one, day two picks. Move on to Ohio State, the Ezekiel Elliott years. They didn't have a quarterback, right? Really. I mean, they had Cardale Jones, JT Barrett, Braxton Miller. They kind of had that combo. No star quarterback. Cardale Jones won the playoff as their third string quarterback. But when you look at this team, it was just loaded with high end talent. 7.33 NFL players per class, so about on average, you know, that's about where the other teams are. But then 77% of those were day one and day two picks, 17 out of 22 in that 3-year span. Eight first rounders. You talk about guys like Ryan Shazier, Taylor Decker, Gearing Conley, Ezekiel Elliott, Joey Bosa, Eli Apple, Billy Price, Deron Lee, and some really good second rounders, including Michael Thomas, who was a multiple time Pro Bowler. So loaded, loaded roster that Urban Meyer inherited and also helped build. I guess in this one, 2011, this one he really built up. Alabama, 2015, 9.33, so 9 1/3 NFL players on average, 67% day one and day two, six first rounders. This is the Jacob Coker team. Now you're getting, this is the highest amount of NFL players per class was this team, with about 9 1/3 per class, helped Jacob Coker, an average quarterback, win the national championship. You're talking about names like Amari Cooper, Jonathan Allen, Reuben Foster, O.J. Howard, Marlon Humphrey, Rashawn Evans, you know, names like this that really kind of helped elevate that team. Eddie Jackson, a fourth rounder out of South Florida who ended up being a Pro Bowl player. Clemson in 2016 is interesting because they had the lowest average of NFL players per class, about 5 2/3. 62.5% were day one, day two, so that's about normal. Five first rounders on the lower end, but a good ratio. But really, when you look at this team, first thing you notice, Deshaun Watson, first round pick, helped elevate guys. He had Cleveland Farrell, Christian Wilkins, Shaq Lawson, three first round defensive linemen, which really helped move things along. And then a first round receiver in Mike Williams and a walk on Hunter Renfrow, who ended up going to the fifth round, great college player. So you see quarterback, receiver, defensive line sort of pumping up this group beyond what it would be on paper, but you're still getting at least 5 2/3 NFL players per class. Alabama 2017, 8 2/3 NFL players per class, 65% day one, day two. So about normal there, a little higher than average on the per class. Eight first rounders. Talking about Marlon Humphrey, Rashawn Evans, Calvin Ridley, Darren Payne, Minka Fitzpatrick, Quinnen Williams, who was a really good evaluation for them. Josh Jacobs, first rounder, who was a three-star player. Irv Smith, three-star player, moved up. So some good evals here and some premium players, just your standard Alabama mix. Alabama consistently was higher than average, even among champions, when it came to NFL players per class. Back to Clemson, again, it goes down a little bit. Six NFL players per class on average, 62.5% day one, day two. Six first rounders. Now, the story of 2018 Clemson, similar to what we just talked about. You have Cleveland Farrell, Wilkins, who stayed their whole career. They were seniors. Dexter Lawrence, another first round defense alignment. So you have a lot of defense alignment concentrated. But you also had Trevor Lawrence, who's not listed here because he's a true freshman, coming in and elevating the roster. He had a second round receiver in T. Higgins, who's been a great pro, a great weapon at running back, and Travis Etienne. So defensive line, weapons for your elite quarterback, that's going to help you play above your weight when it comes to NFL players. But still, you're talking about six NFL players per class. LSU with Joe Burrow and Chase and Jefferson. This team, Joe Burrow's account in the rankings as a transfer, but this team really had a high volume of NFL players, less, probably the lowest ratio of impact, day one, day two picks, but you had those great guys at top. 8.3 players on average, 56% day one, day two. So again, this was a higher percentage of of lower round picks than usual, six first rounders. But you're talking about Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, Devin White, Patrick Queen, some really, really good names here, which elevated that group. And finally, last one, this was the most loaded team, the 2020 Alabama Crimson Tide, led by Mac Jones. This was, I mean, this team was ridiculous. 8.66 NFL players on average in those draft classes, 77% day one and day two, 11 first rounders. Tua, Leatherwood, Najee Harris, Henry Ruggs, Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy, Jedrick Willis, Mac Jones. That's just one class. So just one class, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 first rounders in one recruiting class, plus 2 second rounders, a third, and 2 sixes. That is one of the greatest classes in college football history, the backbone of that national championship team. So how does this all relate to Miami? So now you have the target. You want Miami to get at least 7 pros per class. You want in that 3-year window about a couple first rounders every year, give or take. And you want the majority, preferably 2/3 of those drafted players to be day one, day two. Those are your big takeaways. How did Miami compare? I try to use the 17, 18, and 19 classes as a snapshot because it avoided the COVID year and some guys that are still on the team that may be pros. So in that 3-year window, did Miami have 7 players drafted per year? No. Per class? No. 2 1/3 players drafted per recruiting class, significantly lower. Was it majority day one, day two picks or 2/3 day one, two picks? No. 14.2% were day one, day two picks, which is really just 1 out of 7. Greg Rousseau, who also happened to be the only first rounder. In 2017, which should have been a great class for Mark Richt, a lot of momentum, you ended up only signing DJ Dallas 4th round, Garvin 7th round, John Ford 7th round. Very disappointing class given where we were as a program. 2018, the program is at its peak. Turnover chain, great recruiting staff. It seemed like we were getting a lot of big name recruits. 4 players drafted only, which is the same as this year. You had Greg Rousseau as a first rounder, but then 5th round Brevin Jordan, 7th round DJ Ivy, 5th round Will Mallory. So didn't pan out that particular class. 2019 transition class to Manny Diaz, 0 players drafted from that class. I'm talking about players that are drafted, you know, from the Miami Hurricanes. So that's the story, man. That's where we got to go. Mario Cristobal, when you're looking at classes for Cristobal, you want to see 7 guys that are going to be drafted. They're going to hear their names called on draft day, not undrafted free agents, guys going to be called on draft day. You want 2 first rounders in that group, and you want the majority of those guys, preferably the overwhelming majority, to be day one and day two picks. That is the story of building a champion. Now we have the transfer portal now. Do transfer portal players replace, you know, maybe it's 4 guys from the portal, 3 or 4 guys from high school, 3 guys from the portal that get drafted. You know, maybe the calculus changes that way. But those are the raw numbers that we should be aiming to in the Cristobal era. There's a great recruiting staff, a lot of money being spent. That is when you know that we're on the right track, when we're hitting those numbers. So when you're looking at a recruiting class, think, who are the guys that are going to get drafted? Who are the guys that are going to be first round picks? There should be at least 2. And who are the guys that are going to be day one, day two selections? So that's the story. I appreciate you guys tuning in. The draft was a lot of fun. We'll be talking about next year's draft, hopefully with some more first round picks on the board. And we'll talk about all these portal guys that we've added. We're going to break their games down even further. Some more movement in the portal to come. It is going to be a really fun week this week on the Canes Insight Daily Podcast. So thanks for tuning in.